people are actually losing their homes and asking to rent in our apartments.
The biggest obstacle is, of course, lack of funds.
We think we've helped 58,000 people.
We're constantly having a greater demand for affordable housing.
Welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing.
Since 1988, the California Housing Partnership Corporation, CHPC, has helped create and preserve more than 20,000 affordable homes in California and provided training and technical assistance to more than 10,000 individuals. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and on this episode of the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing, our guest is Matt Schwartz, President and CEO of CHPC. Matt works with local government and nonprofit organizations on policy advocacy, technical assistance, and training. He's been involved in the development, planning, and financing of affordable housing for more than 20 years in both the private and public sectors. In recognition of Matt's work shaping legislation and regulations to expand the resources available to preserve and create housing for the state's lowest income residents, the Southern California Association of Nonprofit Housing named Matt the 2010 Advocate of the Year, and the Nonprofit Housing Association of Northern California gave Matt the 2013 Inspirational Leadership Award. Congratulations.
Thanks, Joanne.
And what happens next year?
Next year, I retire.
Okay. All right, Matt, welcome to the program. The number of extremely low-income renters in California is really high and, as I understand it, growing. Eden alone has 15,000 households on its waiting lists for some 5,500 apartments. Is this problem severe across the nation, or is California unique?
It is absolutely severe across the nation, as a recent Harvard study confirmed, and people in other states already know. But what makes, there's several things that make our state unfortunately worse off than other states. And one of those is the relationship between dropping incomes for middle class and low income workers and a housing market that has such a shortfall and is so desirable that it has totally put the market out of whack for low and moderate income households, and anyone who's out there renting or trying to buy knows that already.
So it's bad for people trying to buy, it's bad for people trying to rent.
Yeah, and the other major factor that people who've been in the state for a while know is that our state went through a horrible budget crisis, and in the middle of that crisis made some tough decisions that some of us question now that resulted in the elimination of pretty much all state support for the production of affordable to low-income households.
So in some sense, we're facing the perfect storm, massive demand for affordable housing and then significantly depleted resources at the same time. So you have a new report out, how California's housing market is failing to meet the needs of low-income families. And I'm wondering, your report talks about the cuts to housing. Can you give our listeners an overview of just how much funding has been lost?
Absolutely. So we have lost over $1 billion a year in redevelopment funding for low and moderate income housing that used to flow through local governments throughout the state. And in addition to that, we've lost about $500 million a year that used to be available from state-sponsored housing bonds that were voter-approved and that have not been renewed. So about $1.5 billion a year has been lost at a state level. And then in addition to that, we've lost hundreds of millions from federal funding that has been continually reduced, despite having a president that many think is the most pro-affordable housing in our country's history. We've seen, unfortunately, nothing but declines. And so that's an accumulated shortfall, a loss of funding of closing in on $2 billion a year. And even for a state of California's resources, that is way too much to recover from without a real government plan to intervene and come back into this market.
Let's stop here and talk about the federal level and then move down to the state. President Obama just released his budget. Is it going to get worse? Is that your sense?
Well, we had a little bit of a break. It's all relative at this point, but we've kind of staved off the prospect of further cuts for the next year and a half, roughly, taking us through the 2015 federal fiscal year because they reached a two-year budget agreement in Washington that essentially stabilizes the funding levels for most major programs. But that doesn't actually mean that we're not going to see some further erosion of key programs like the Section 8 Housing Choice Voucher program that is California's single biggest source of affordable housing. It's supporting more than 300,000 households. And so we're not keeping up with cost of living increases in our flat funding federal environment. And although that's better than cuts, Joanne, it's not going to do anything to get us out of the situation we're in unless there's some new developments in Washington.
Are there any options for replacing that funding that might be viable in the near future?
Well, there's one prospect for us that could materialize by the end of this year, and that's the National Housing Trust Funds, which Congress actually authorized in 2008 and then immediately suspended any funding for because of the economic crisis at that point. At least that was the excuse given by Congress. And there's absolutely no reason that the funding for the National Housing Trust Fund should not be restored at this point with the federal housing mortgage agencies, the insurance agencies, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, making billions of dollars a year in profit. We have them now making $6-7 billion a year. They paid back funding that's been had been loaned to them during the economic crisis. So now there are profits that should be going to fund the National Housing Trust Fund, and it's going to be up to the new regulator in charge of the Federal Housing Finance Agency, Mel Watt, recently confirmed by the Senate after the change in confirmation rules. And Mr. Watt has the power to restore a flow of funds to the National Housing Trust Fund, which could lead to California receiving as much as $100 million a year going forward. Will he do that is the source of a lot of speculation. Many of us are trying to reach him to let him know how serious the crisis is in California and other states. But we're hopeful and we're going to keep working on it, and our listeners should also do what they can to join the National Low-Income Housing Coalition in their campaign to get Mr. Watt to do what's right and restore the flow of funds to the National Housing Trust Fund and redeem its promise.
Excellent. We'll remind them about that at the very end of the show. You've made some very specific recommendations for state and local officials to solve the California affordable housing crisis. Let's talk about what the state can do.
So I think the most important thing that our report points out, and it's frankly a direct rebuttal to comments by state leaders that the private market is working just fine in California and is taking care of everyone's housing needs and that there doesn't need to be a state intervention. And what our report shows is that's absolutely not true, that not only did the foreclosure crisis not make housing more affordable, as some have asserted, but things actually got dramatically worse. We had 600,000 additional households become renters over the last 6 to 7 years, and that has just put tremendous pressure, particularly in the low end of our rental markets, where working poor and even moderate income people are being squeezed out. So our recommendations really go towards getting the state to address the fact that there needs to be a plan. We cannot leave this to the vagaries and imperfections of a market that may work for high-income households, but it certainly doesn't work for low and moderate-income households. So at the top of our list of recommendations is to support, to pass, and approve the Homes and Jobs Act. It's one that's been sponsored by Senator DeSaulnier, and that passed through the state Senate last year and has been held in the Appropriations Committee in the State Assembly. And that bill, if approved, would restore about $500 million a year in funding for production of new affordable homes in the state. It would be a terrific tool, and it's desperately needed.
The lion's share of local government resources came from redevelopment funding. So since redevelopment agencies have been dissolved, are local governments coming up with creative ways to replace that funding?
Well, a few are. And there's one right here in the Bay Area that's, I think, stimulating activity throughout other local governments. San Francisco established a trust fund, a housing trust fund, with a combination of local taxes and linkage fees and some redirected former redevelopment funding. And that trust fund is having a positive impact in San Francisco and enabling San Francisco to keep going with its plans for supporting more affordable home production. But it's still a drop in the bucket. And other jurisdictions in the Bay Area have stepped up and are approving redirecting at least a small portion of the former redevelopment funds, which is a very courageous act politically for local governments to take without the structure of redevelopment law to do that. But we've seen that happen in the East Bay and the Peninsula. Local governments are stepping up in at least restoring a trickle of funds. But, Joanne, that's not going to be nearly enough. It really is a trickle. It's so we have other recommendations that would give local governments additional tools. And one of the most important ones is to give local governments the ability to go to the voters and get approval of funding to support affordable homes and other key infrastructure projects, which include transportation and parks, at a reasonable voter threshold, which we believe is 55%, the same as already exists for education facility bonds. And so lowering the voter threshold to 55% is a critical move. It does not guarantee anyone any funding, but it gives local governments a critical tool that right now they're being denied by a two-thirds vote requirement that is just unreasonable.
So that's for darn near anything, really.
That's right. Even San Francisco has failed a couple of times to pass that two-thirds approval mark by less than a percentage point. And that's a standard that's too high for any local government to meet. A second tool that local governments need back is they need the clear ability to require the inclusion of affordable homes in larger market rate developments. And this is often referred to as inclusionary zoning. And it has become a widespread best practice among local governments in California. More than 170 have been adopted statewide. But recent court decisions have questioned some of the original statutory authority to do this, and the legislature stepped in after a hard discussion and sent the governor a bill that would have clearly reauthorized the ability and clarified the ability of local governments to pass inclusionary zoning ordinances. And unfortunately, the governor, drawing upon his experience as the former mayor of Oakland, declined to support the act and vetoed it. And that, I'm sorry, it was a mistake. And it's really hurting local governments. And we need the governor to reconsider that and the legislature to send it back to him. A third tool that is being considered in the legislature and needs to be passed is a new generation of tax increment funding authority for local governments. That would be a redevelopment 2.0, a better, more efficient, more effective way to finance local infrastructure development. The increases in property values that occurs when local government invests strategically in geographic areas. So we need to give local governments a tax increment financing tool that's better, more effective, and perhaps a little slimmer than the redevelopment tool used to be, but they need that badly.
Are there any successful models in other states, Matt, that you think could be replicated in California?
One model that I think is really worthy of study is in Massachusetts. The state has implemented a across-the-board requirement that any housing developer who includes at least 10% of the homes as affordable to low and moderate income is given an expedited permitting process consistent with local environmental and federal environmental rules. Nothing's left off there. But essentially, they're rewarding developers who do provide some affordable homes on their own with expedited processing. And California needs a statewide approach that promotes the inclusion of affordable homes in every development, and our leaders have yet to adopt that that approach, and we need to study it and, I hope, implement it.
Eden Housing recently opened an affordable housing community in downtown Palo Alto, and some city residents there became very vocal about the fact that now low-income residents are receiving housing in a very expensive market that's out of reach to folks earning the median household income. Is this a new problem?
I think it's an existing tension that's become greatly exacerbated as the housing market, particularly the rental market, has just exploded in the Bay Area due to the increased demand, primarily driven by tech workers. And it's one that we have to address. We previously hoped that moderate income workers would be able to afford homes in these, in our high-income communities, and that's no longer the case. They also need assistance. And the Homes and Jobs Act, for one measure, would actually help both very low-income and moderate-income households find more affordability. It won't help every household, but we do have measures that are have been proposed that would help both moderate and low-income. The Homes and Jobs Act is one. The inclusionary housing ordinance I spoke of earlier, if passed, would help both low and moderate. And I think rather than seeing this as a zero-sum game, we need moderate income households to join low-income households in a push for more affordable homes across the board.
So how do you respond when people express that sort of anger or, as you politely referred to it, tension?
How I respond is that we all need to realize our housing markets are broken. They're broken for everybody except the wealthy in the Bay Area. And that is, there's no choice for low-income housing, for low-income households or moderate-income households in our current housing market. We clearly need to produce more, but we also need to recognize that prices are out of control, being driven by economic activity. And the corporations that are driving that economic activity need to step up and take more responsibility and work with local governments more actively, and they need the help of the legislature to do it. So we all need to recognize that people are suffering because of a failure of our states and particularly our local areas for housing markets, and not blame each other.
We have the ears of many affordable housing advocates, both in California and elsewhere, listening right now. So what specific suggestions could you give them to encourage more support for the creation and preservation of affordable housing?
So there are a couple things that people can do immediately to help change this horrible situation with this horrible shortfall of almost a million homes statewide. Number one is to contact their representatives in the state assembly and demand rapid passage of the Homes and Jobs Act of 2013, also known as SB 391. And that bill, as I said, is being held in the Appropriations Committee in the Assembly due to opposition by realtors, late-breaking opposition. After initially agreeing not to oppose the bill, the realtors changed their minds and have come out against that, and they are killing the best chance that we have right now to provide some assistance to low and moderate income households. And we need to pass SB 391, and people need to step up and contact their assembly members. A second thing people can do is there is a new ballot measure on the June primary called Proposition 41. And this is the Veterans Housing and Homeless Prevention Act. It won't help everyone, but if passed by the voters in June, this would authorize the restructuring of $600 million of previously approved state housing bonds to be able to be used to construct rental housing that would be affordable to low and moderate income veterans. And I think many of us recognize that, that veterans, particularly in this new era of wars from Afghanistan and Iraq that are leaving people disabled in different ways, really could use this assistance. California has the highest number of homeless veterans in the country. And this proposition, Proposition 41, the Veterans Housing and Homeless Prevention Act, would make a big dent in this. So this is something people can support right away by getting out and joining the Proposition 41 campaign.
Excellent. Matt Schwartz, I want to thank you so much for your insights and for all the work that you do with the California Housing Partnership Corporation.
Thank you, Joanna. Thanks to Eden Housing for sponsoring this and being a leader in the field.
Excellent. To learn more or to hear prior episodes of the Affordable Housing Podcast, you can find it in iTunes for free or visit us at edenhousing.org.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.